Taihoas. Tsakit och ish no puchilaluk pawatum tlahui. Today is the 26th. Today we'll be finishing with handout 6 and 7. The last recorded lecture, which you can access from the course webpage, was a quick introduction to these two handouts. Today we'll be going over them again so that you can finish homework 2 or start homework 3 during the second hour today. Last time, when I started with handout 6, I started from the beginning, but today I'd like to start from the end, since several of you have already heard me talk about this handout and have taken part in the discussion. Let's take a look at the exercise at the end, exercise 17, which is on homework 3. This exercise asks you to look at the consonants at the beginning of the Nuchanwulf words in example 1 and identify the consonants' place, manner, and phonation. Let's take a look at those. We're now looking at example 1. Let's go through these words again. These are Nuchanwulf words. Tom, can I ask you to help me say these words for everyone? Okay, here we go. The first word, Tom, is gun, poo. Huasi. Star, tattoos. Big, yeah. Sharp, suchk. Let go, suchit. Chief, hatwith. Tongue, chup. River, tsa'ak. Wedge, tlanat. Bird, ma'mati. Sing, nunuk. This is what daughter of sea cucumber says when she's sitting on her chamber pot. Lu, 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 lu. Saying, wah, wah. Dogfish, yacha. Let's talk about the first word in the table. Gun, poo, poo. Exercise 17 asks you to talk specifically about the first sound of poo. The first sound of poo is the P sound. P, p. The question is, what is its place, manner, and phonation? Okay, there's a list of consonant places just below example 1. So places include bilabial, labiodental, interdental, alveolar, and so on. These are all defined at the bottom of page 11. But another way to look at it is given on page 14. So we're using handouts 6 and 7 together now. On handout 7, page 14, example 5. This gives all of the Nuchanwulf consonants, but put in table form. The columns correspond to different places along the vocal tract, from the lips down to the glottis. The rows correspond to different manners, different ways of making a sound. Now, the consonant places that are defined at the bottom of page 12, sorry, bottom of page 11, these are very detailed. These are all of the places along the vocal tract that human languages use. But for any given language, we only have to talk about some of them. So the table on page 14 shows us the ones that we need to worry about for Nuchanwulf. There are 11 total columns in the chart, but they're divided into four big columns. that roughly correspond to different parts of the vocal tract. Can anyone tell me what those big columns correspond to? So there's one big column that contains P and M, another one that contains T, N, C, and S and Y, another that contains K, Q, X, and W, and a fourth that contains glottal stop and H. What part of the vocal tract does that first column correspond to, the one with P in it? Aimee asks, would the first column be bilabial? And the answer is yes. So that first column represents the lips. So remember when I told you that when linguists draw the vocal tract, we always draw the person facing to the left. So the lips are at the left side. That's what that first column refers to. Okay, what about the second big column? The one containing T, N, Bardell, C, and S. What place in the vocal tract does that represent? Okay, just so you guys know, it's when I'm sharing my screen, it's hard for me to keep up with what's happening in the chat. So I prefer it if you just sing it out. And don't worry, your voice won't appear on the recording. I'm recording only my own voice for this lecture. I just had two guesses for what that second column represents. One guess is that it's interdental sounds. The second guess is that it's roof of the mouth sounds. Neither of these is quite right. One is too precise and one is too general. Interdental sounds are sounds made with the tongue between the teeth, and this is defined at the bottom of page 11. Take a look at interdental, page 11, made with the tongue tip between the teeth. And examples of these are the TH sounds of English. Th, th. Neuchanoff has no interdental sounds. So that is too precise in this case. Roof of the mouth. It is true that C wedge, S wedge, and Y are made at the roof of the mouth, but so are K, Q, and X. So these are all made at the roof of the mouth, but at different parts of the roof of the mouth. Let's take a look at this diagram. And this might help you visualize the different parts of the roof of the mouth. So starting at the teeth, there's a bony ridge right behind the teeth that we call the alveolar ridge. Then we get to the hard palate. The hard palate is the front of the roof of the mouth, and it has bone right under the skin. You can feel that hard bone if you feel the top of the roof of your mouth with your tongue. But the back of the roof of the mouth is soft. It has muscle under bone. That's the velum. So the roof of the mouth is divided into at least two parts. The front part, which is the palate or hard palate, and the back part, which is the velum or soft palate. So to return to this diagram, the sounds at the front of that second box, T, N, Bardell, those are alveolar sounds. They are made at the alveolar ridge. T, n, th. Plain C and plain S are also alveolar sounds. T, s. But C wedge, S wedge, and Y are palatal sounds. They are made at the hard palate. Sh, ch, y. So of these sounds, T, N, Bard lambda, Bardell, C, and S are made with the tip of the tongue against the alveolar ridge. Ta 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 ta. They are alveolar. C wedge, S wedge, and Y are palatal. Now let's move to the third big column, the one that has the K's, Q's, X's, and W's in it. Where in the mouth are we now? What region of the vocal tract? K's, X's, and W's are made at the soft palate, that is the back of the roof of the mouth. One way to remind yourself of that is to look at the diagrams on page 12. These show some very common sounds and where in the vocal tract they're made. So if you look at T, Look at example two on page 12. This shows us where pa, ta, cha, ka, kha, and are made. Excuse me. Now it's important to understand that these symbols are written in IPA. IPA is similar, but not the same as the Nuchonalth alphabet and the English alphabet. So you have to know that the ch, the t, plus the big, the tall S and the overbar, that represents the same sound as CH in English and as C wedge in Nuchonalth. That's a ch. And if you forget that, that is made clear on handout 7. Handout 7, example 4, shows every single sound of Nuchonalth in the Nuchonalth alphabet and the IPA. So you'll see there that the C wedge sound, the sound that we write with the C wedge in the Nuchonalth alphabet, we write with T plus a tall S in IPA. So back to handout 6, example 2, diagram 2. This shows us that P is made at the lips, T is made at the alveolar ridge, Ch is made at the hard palate, K is made at the soft palate, and Q is made at the uvula. The uvula is that dangly piece of skin. Going back to the bottom of page 11, what are the technical names for these places? What is the technical name for a case for the place of a K sound? Q is made a little bit further back still from K. What is the technical term for the place of Q? I heard uvular. Uvular is correct. Uvular means made at the uvula. The uvula is that dangly piece of skin. So, to conclude our discussion of exercise 17, I told you that I would give you a couple of different methods for determining the place of a language sound. One way is the more technical, anatomical way. That is to look at the diagrams at the top of page 12, diagrams 2, 3, and 4, which show you where in the vocal tract some important sounds are made. These show you, for example, that T is made at the alveolar ridge, that front X is made at the velum or soft palate, and that M, that is the sound of ma mati, is made at the lips. That's one method for determining the place of a sound. The second method that I mentioned is to use the table at the top of page 14. This table lays out all of the consonants of Nuchonalth in rows and columns. The columns correspond to places in the vocal tract. There are 11 columns, and these columns correspond to specifically the lips. That's the first column, the one with P, P, and M. That's the lips. The columns 2 and 3, 2, 3, and 4, with T, N, bar lambda, bar L, C, and S. Those represent the alveolar ridge. Column 5 with C wedge, S wedge, and Y represents the hard palate. Column 6 and 7 with K's, X's, and W's represents the soft palate or velum. Columns 8 and 9 with Q's and back X's correspond to the uvula. Column 10 with the pharyngeal sounds correspond to the pharynx. That's the part of the throat that where the tongue root is located. And the very last column with glottal stop and H corresponds to the glottis. That's the space between the vocal cords. Are there any other questions or discussion about how to determine the place of a consonant? Columns 6 and 7 with K's, X's, and W's correspond to the soft palate or velum. Now let's talk about consonant manner. On page 11, I list six different manners that are important for English and Nuchonalth: stops, fricatives, affricates, nasals, liquids, and glides. So, based on the discussion we just had and the information in example one. This gives you enough information to know that the P sound is a bilabial stop. It's a bilabial stop. It's made at the lips and its manner is stop. Let's take another sound. The Nuchonalth word for tongue is chop. Chop. Chop starts with the hard C wedge sound. Ch. The place of C wedge, as we just discussed, is the hard palate. It is a palatal sound. And its manner is affricate. Affricate. So that is one way to read off the manner of these sounds. However, if you look on page 14, back at this chart, this presents a somewhat simplified view of consonant manner. Even though the consonants of Nuchonalth belong to several different manners, for most purposes, we can talk about them as if they belong to only three manners: plosives, fricatives, and resonants. So, P, T, barred lambda, and K, for example, are plosives. What plosives have in common is that they involve stopping the air and then releasing it in a small explosion. S, X, and H are fricatives. What these have in common is that they involve not stopping the air completely, but mostly blocking the air so that the air hisses noisily. It creates friction. That's where the name fricative comes from. S, h, h. These are frictionful sounds. That's why they're called fricatives. And M, N, W, and Y, we call by the general term resonance. They do have more specific names, the names that are given on page 11, but these more general names are just as good. The last thing that was asked for in exercise 17 was a consonant's phonation. Last week we talked about the fact that English has two kinds of phonation, voiceless and voiced, and that is demonstrated in example 5. So example 5 shows that in English we have a lot of pairs of consonants where the two consonants are identical, except that one has voiceless phonation and one has voiced phonation. So one example is P and B, p, b. These are almost the same sound, except P is voiceless and b is voiced. Voiced means that the vocal cords are vibrating. Voiceless means that the vocal cords are not vibrating. Another example is S and Z, s, z, s, z. Again, these are almost the same sound, except that S has voiceless phonation and Z has voiced phonation. So those are the two phonation types that are important in English, voiceless and voiced. Nuchonalth is a little different. In Nuchonalth, the two important phonation types are plain and glottalized. Nuchonalth does not have voiced sounds like B and Z, but Nuchonalth does have glottalized sounds like glottalized P, glottalized C, glottalized K, which I usually call hard P, hard C, hard K for short. Let's compare these. The word for gun, pu, starts with a plain P, pu, pu. That plain P has plain phonation. That is, the vocal cords aren't doing anything special. But glottalized P, as in puppy, which means ear, puppy, that is a glottalized or hard P. That P has glottalized phonation. Puppy. Can you hear it? The glottalization of that P makes its explosion a little bit stronger. Puppy. Another example, let's look at the two barred lambdas. There's a plain barred lambda, kla, kla, as in clanut. Clanut is a wedge that you use to split wood. Clanut, that's a plain barred lambda. But the word klisuk, which means the color white, klisuk, has a glottalized barred lambda. So just like English has lots of pairs of consonants where one is voiceless and one is voiced, Nechaninoff has lots of pairs of consonants where one consonant is plain and the other is glottalized. If there are no more questions about exercise 17 and handout 6, I'm going to go on to talk about handout 7. Handout 7 is about alphabets. And you have two exercises for handout 7 to do for homework 3. Those are exercises 18 and 20. I already talked a little bit about handout 7 last time. So I'm going to start with an overview of the entire handout, and then I'm going to speak from the point of view of the exercises. Handout 7 first presents the English alphabet. That's in example 1. The English alphabet consists of 26 letters. Each letter has a capital and a lowercase version. The English alphabet is basically the Roman alphabet. That is the alphabet that was used by the Romans to write Latin. But we've added a few letters since the Romans used it. The Roman alphabet had only 23 letters, but we added W, J, and U sometime in the Middle Ages and Enlightenment. Then, in examples 2 and 3, I lay out all of the sounds of English, the consonants and the vowels, but organized by their place and manner. So you'll see that English, for example, has a lot more labial sounds, sounds made with the lips, than Nechaninoff does. Nechaninoff has only P and M at the lips, but English has P, B, F, V, and M. English also has interdental sounds. Those are the th and the sounds, which Nechaninoff does not have. English has a velar nasal. That's the ng sound that we write with ng. That's that N with the long tail that you see in the lower right of diagram 2. So that's the last sound in the word ring, for example. As we were just talking about, English distinguishes voiceless and voiced phonation. So there are lots of pairs of consonants in English that differ only in their voicing. One is voiceless, like P or T or K, and the other is voiced, like B or D or G. Now we start talking about the Nechaninoff alphabet. Diagram 4 gives you the entire Nechaninoff alphabet, that is all 45 sounds. The way they're written in Nechaninoff, that's the top row. The way they're written in the International Phonetic Alphabet, that's the second row. And the way they're written in the rival Whalers, which we'll talk a bit more about in a minute. The rival Whalers was an important text that Edward Sapir published in 1924. It was the first published text in Nechaninoff, and it used an old-fashioned writing system that we don't use anymore. But example 4 shows you the correspondence for every sound of Nechaninoff between the Nechaninoff alphabet, the IPA, and the rival Whalers. So, for example, we were talking about the ch sound earlier, the sound that we write in English with a ch. In the Nechaninoff alphabet, we write that sound with a C wedge. That's the fifth sound in diagram 4. You see that? The C wedge? Ch. That represents the ch sound. In Nechaninoff, it's written with a C wedge. In the IPA, it's written with a T plus a tall S symbol. And in the rival Whalers, it was written TC. That was how Sapir wrote it almost 100 years ago. Now let's look at diagrams 5 and 6. These lay out all of the consonants and vowels of Nechaninoff, but in rows and columns according to where in the vocal tract they're made and what kind of sound they're made, what kind of sound they are. So once you know how to read these diagrams, it should be very easy to answer exercise 17. This diagram shows you right off that P is a plosive made at the lips. K is a plosive made at the soft palate. X is a fricative made at the soft palate, and H is a fricative made at the glottis. Take a look at diagram 6, which shows the vowels of Nechanov. This divides the vowels of Nechanov into high, mid, and low. And this is useful for describing things like umlaut in Nechanov, which is something that does happen in the language. These diagrams clarify some other things. For example, if you look in at the Nechanov consonants in diagram 5, you begin to see patterns in which sounds have certain properties. So, take a look, for example, at the sounds that have plain and glottalized counterparts. Some consonants of Nechanov have plain and glottalized versions, and some just have a plain version. And it's not random, it's systematic. Can someone state the rule? Which sounds in Nechanov have plain and glottalized versions, and which consonants have only a plain version? Yes, that's a good observation. Uvular sounds like Q do not have glottalized versions in Nechanov. That is true. But there's more to it than that. Fricative sounds in Nechanov never have glottalized versions. They only can be plain. But plosives and resonants can be both plain and glottalized. But as Carla just pointed out, not every plosive and resonant has plain and glottalized versions. When we get towards the very back of the vocal tract, towards the uvular, pharyngeal, and glottal sounds, those do not distinguish plain and glottalized versions. The uvulars just have plain versions, and the other sounds just have glottalized versions. Last week, I gave you a short history of the Nechanov alphabet. I will recapitulate that very briefly right now. The first people to write Nechanov in a systematic way were the linguists Edward Sapir, Morris Swadesh, and Mary Haas. They used an old-fashioned alphabet at first that no one uses anymore. And we saw an example of that in The Rival Whalers, which was published in 1924. Then, in 1939, Sapir and Swadesh published the important book Nootka Texts, which presented 44 texts collected from Nechanov speakers, mostly Tsleil-Waututh speakers, and mostly from one man whose name was Sayaj Apis. These texts were written in a new alphabet that is almost the same as the one we use today, with a few small differences, and we talked a little bit about those tiny differences. The next important step in the development of the Nechanov alphabet was the Dat-Daksapa Dictionary, which was published in 1991. This was a list of about 2,000 words in about 9 different dialects, published by the Nechanov Tribal Council. It used the same alphabet as Nootka texts in 1939, but with the small changes that made it the alphabet that we use today. So the alphabet that we use today for writing Nechanov basically started with the 1939 Nootka texts and was then finalized in the 1991 Dat-Daksapa Dictionary. Now consider the term orthography. This term is defined at the beginning of Handout 7, orthography. It's defined as a standardized, approved, or official way of writing a language. One of the exercises that you're doing for homework 3 is exercise 18. Exercise 18 asks you, are the English and Nechanov alphabets orthographies? That is, are they official or approved ways of writing the language? Are they standardized? What do you think? The discussion that we just had, I don't think gave a final answer to exercise 18. That will be your job when you write your homework. But we saw, I think we mentioned most of the important things we need to consider when answering the question, are the English and Nuchanoth alphabets orthographies? We saw that in both cases, both with English and with Nuchanoth, there's no one who explicitly has the authority to tell everyone else how to write, what alphabet to use. But we have some, what we might call de facto authorities, that is, things that are treated as authorities. In the English-speaking world, dictionaries are considered the authority. When there's a question about how to spell a word, we go to the dictionary and we treat that as authoritative. In the Nuchanoth world, elders are generally treated as authoritative. The Dat-Akspa dictionary was put together by about 20 elders, and I'm about to show you the frontispiece that names those elders. This is the first page of the Dat-Akspa dictionary, also called Our World, Our Ways. And it lists all of the elders who contributed. Looks like more than 20. Andrew Callicum, Martin Charles, Cecilia Tate Charles, Rose Coutts, August Dick, Juliana George. I believe the colloquiate contributors were Mary Hayes, Ruth Martin, and Bob Martin. Is that right? And for Ahauzit, I see Caroline Little's name. So she was one of the Ahauzit contributors. I see the name Harold Little, but I don't know him. Was he Ahauzit? So Caroline and Harold Little would be two of the Ahauzit authorities on which this dictionary rests. Ah, Harold was Caroline's husband, Anna's father. When you ex answer exercise 18, you will have to consider whether you think the English and Nuchanoth alphabets are orthographies, that is, are they standardized, are they authoritative, and then say why or why not. And these are some of the things that you will need to discuss in order to answer that question. We're now at our hour mark, so we'll take a break. After the break, I will wrap up this lecture and give you the rest of class time to work on your homework. Chooch. Huuksatoetlin. We're back from our break and we're looking at exercise 19 on handout 6. Exercise 19 asks, why isn't the International Phonetic Alphabet used to write Nuchanoth? Take a look at diagram 4. Diagram 4 lays out all the sounds of Nuchanoth as they are written in the Nuchanoth alphabet and how we would write the same sounds in the International Phonetic Alphabet. Why do you think we use the Nuchanoth alphabet and not the International Phonetic Alphabet? Darlene suggested, was the Nuchanoth alphabet designed to make it easier to write the language? And here is one way that the Nuchanoth alphabet is intended to make the language easier to write. For each sound, we have one letter. So the ch sound, even though it is a complex sound, behaves as a single sound in Nuchanoth, a single consonant, and so we have a single letter for it, see which. Similarly, the tl sound, which we write with the barred lambda, also behaves as a single sound, even though it is complex. And the Nuchanoth alphabet gives us a single letter to write that sound. So the generalization that I'm driving at is that the Nuchanoth alphabet is designed specifically for this language. That is why it purposefully gives each sound a single letter. And that does make it easier to write words, to read words once you know the alphabet, and to analyze them, to break them down into their parts. Whereas if we use, say, two letters to write a sound, we might be confused whether those letters are meant to be pronounced separately or together. Exercise 20 is on the homework. It gives you some transcriptions from the rival whalers. So to refresh your memory, the rival whalers was that text that Sapir published in 1924. Let me show you again what it looks like. Here it is, the rival whalers, a Nit-Nat story. Even though it says a Nit-Nat story, it's actually in Nuchanoth. The story comes from Nit-Nat Lake, but it is not in the DT.Dot language. It is in the Nuchanoth language. We took a look at this last time, And we saw how it looks quite different from the alphabet that we use today. It's difficult to read until you get used to it. What you see here are some words from that story written as Sapir wrote them in 1924. What you're going to do is transliterate each word into the new Chanoth alphabet and give an English translation. Let's read these words together. I'll read them to you just the way they're written, and I think some of you will recognize some of these. So, first column: Chakup, Hinip. Second column: Ihtup, Sukwit. Third column: Yuqua, Thutsmei. Inki, Ah-ah, Tuh-tziti, Usimch, Klupkshitl, O-yi. Now, let's say you're working on exercise 20. How could you go about finding the modern New Chanoth equivalent for each of these symbols? Before we do that, let's talk about the word transliterate. Can someone explain transliterate to me? What do I mean when I say you're going to transliterate the words as Sapir wrote them in 1924 into the New Chanoth alphabet? Let's look at the definition of transliterate at the top of handout 7. Transliterate, to convert symbols of one alphabet into symbols of another alphabet. This is something that I do almost every single day, and you will find useful some of the time if you're trying to access old sources. We were talking earlier today about how many resources are written in outdated alphabets. When you want to make use of those resources, you need to be able to transliterate those old symbols into symbols that we use now. So, back to exercise 20. You're trying to transliterate these old symbols into modern New Chanoth alphabet symbols. How could you go about doing that? Let's take the very first word. It says chakup. Chakup. How would you know how to write that first sound? John has directed us to the diagram at the bottom of page 13. That is diagram 4. This gives you every sound of New Chanoth in the New Chanoth alphabet, in IPA, and in the Rival Whalers. So let's take a look at that word again. And the first word in exercise 20 is chakup. What's the first sound of that word? Cha. Cha is actually two sounds. The New Chanoth symbol for C wedge is the New Chanoth symbol for ch. The ch sound is C wedge. And if you look at the chart in number 4, you'll see that New Chanoth C wedge corresponds to Rival Whalers TC. And that is, in fact, how that word starts. So TC represents the ch sound. So if you're transliterating that into New Chanoth alphabet, the first symbol you're going to write is C wedge. Does this give you an idea of how to do exercise 20? In that case, let's take the rest of the time tonight to work on homework.